Welcome to the Nutrition Science Podcast, where we help you cut through the noise and make informed, science-based decisions about nutrition and your health.
So those of you who are avid listeners of the show may have realized that this episode was published a little bit later than normal. So I've normally been publishing episodes on Wednesdays. This is being published on a Monday, so I skipped the Wednesday. Now I'm publishing on Monday. I am going to continue to publish new episodes on Monday from here forward. So that's one of the reasons why the episode didn't come out on Wednesday. Another reason is that I wanted to pair this episode with a blog post. So we go over a lot of information in this episode. It's going to be good information, but I know most people don't listen to a podcast sitting down with the ability to take notes. So what I did is I wrote a blog post that covers all the information that we cover in this episode, has links to additional resources, and is going to be extremely helpful for anyone who finds this podcast episode helpful. So you can find that blog post at dradrianchavez.com. That's dradrianchavez.com/blood pressure. All lowercase, no spaces or underscores or dashes. So it's dradrianchavez.com/blood pressure. And you're going to be able to find the blog post that covers all the information that is discussed in this episode. I didn't want to cover this information and then not also have a place that's easily accessible for anyone who wants to go deeper and really put this information into action. So check that out if this episode is helpful for you. Another thing I wanted to mention, I've had a lot of feedback around the Q&A episodes. So I will likely be adding in 1 to 2 episodes per month where I'm doing Q&A, and I'm going to do 2 or 3 questions each one. They're going to be a little bit shorter, and I'll probably publish those on about a Wednesday or Thursday. So I'm going to see how I can work those in currently with my other responsibilities, but I'm going to add in hopefully at least 1, maybe 2 Q&A episodes per month. I want to continue with more interview and topic-based episodes on the Monday episodes mostly, and keep the Q&A episodes shorter and on Wednesday and Thursday. Now that may change a bit, but that's the plan as of right now. Speaking of Q&As, if you want to get access to live Q&As, I offer a course, the Nutrition Mastery Blueprint course. This is covering all the information that I think is important in order to set up your nutrition in a way that works for you. So there's certain things that you need to know. How do you find out how many calories you need to be eating? How much protein should you be eating? How much fiber should you be eating? Why is it important? What types of fiber should you be eating? How do you get that into your diet? All of that information is contained in this course, and it's designed to help you learn the information that you need to know to set up your nutrition in a way that works for you. And as a part of that course, one of the students that's a part of the course recently told me that they didn't realize that they get access to the Q&As, and you get live Q&As, which I do 2 times per month for all the students in the course. So that is another way, if you enjoy these Q&A episodes and you want to get access to that type of interaction where you can ask questions live and then those episodes are recorded and then you get access to all the course material, you might want to check out joining my Nutrition Mastery Blueprint course. If you join before Sunday, March 10th, so if you're listening to this when the episode's released, you have about a week. If you join before Sunday, March 10th, you can get 20% off, which will give you $80 off, so it's normally $400. You can get it for $320 if you pay in 1 payment for lifetime access, or you can get it in 6 payments of $60 instead of $75. And again, that's for lifetime access. So you pay 6 times, pay for 6 months, $60 a month, and then you get access for life to the information, to the content, and you can find out more information at the link that I'm going to share in the show notes. That's going to be at dradrianchavez.com/mastery. And again, you can find that link in the show notes. If you're interested, go ahead and check that out as well. Again, you get access to the Q&As and a bunch of really, really useful information if you're going to spend the time and go through it. If you're not going to spend the time and go through it, it's not going to be valuable. If you're going to spend the time and go through it, it's going to be worth significantly more than what you spend on it. So go check that out. in the show notes or dradrianchavez.com/mastery, M-A-S-T-E-R-Y. All right, so let's go ahead and get into the show. How's it going, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Nutrition Science Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian Chavez. In this episode, we are going to discuss nutrition and lifestyle strategies to help improve blood pressure. And this is an important topic because about 40% of the U.S. population has high blood pressure. This is much higher than a few years ago because the classifications recently changed. What was previously considered pre-hypertension has now been redefined as stage one hypertension. We'll discuss what that is in a second. But a large percentage of the U.S. population in most Western countries is experiencing high blood pressure. And high blood pressure can increase your risk of cardiovascular disease or heart disease. We'll talk about exactly how that happens in a second as well. And it's a really important topic. And there's a lot that we can do when it comes to nutrition and lifestyle. So like I said, we'll get into all of those details, because in this episode, we are first going to discuss what high blood pressure is. So we'll talk about the definitions, how to determine if you have high blood pressure, how to test yourself, because you can do that. And then we will discuss what causes high blood pressure. So what are the factors that contribute to your blood pressure going up? So that will help you understand the nutrition and lifestyle strategies that we're going to discuss and how they work and why they're so important. So that is what we're going to discuss in this episode. Before we get started, I want to quickly read a review that I got on the podcast. I want to start to do this just to highlight some of the reviews that come in. I really appreciate them, and I just like to read them. I've started to read them a little bit more often because they're coming in more frequently. More people are listening to the show. I really appreciate all of you who are sharing it because the numbers are increasing pretty quickly. So thank you all so much. So this review is from Our Dwelling Place. It says, "Facts don't require our approval." That's the title. And it says, "As another great podcaster, Sharon McMahon, says often, facts don't require your approval. Dr. Chavez's podcast is full of facts and clear-cut information about things, nutrition science, and I couldn't love it more. In addition to countless episodes about how our bodies respond to what we put in them, he also takes time to respond to debunk current claims, products, and news stories with thoughtful, evidence-based information. He is truly a calming expert and a breath of fresh air in this overwhelming environment of nutrition and wellness. Try one episode. If you're new, I suggest with starting with a Q&A or a topic that you're interested in, and you'll be hooked." Thank you so much, Our Dwelling Place. I really appreciate it. For those of you who like the show and you haven't left a review, I would really appreciate it if you take the time to go leave one. That's what helps the show like climb in the rankings. It has consistently been top 50, top 25 over the last few months, which is great. I just started the podcast about a year ago, and it is doing really, really well right now, and I really appreciate it. And again, that's thanks to all of you who are sharing the show, who are leaving reviews, who are helping this get out to more people. So thank you all so much for that. With that said, let's go ahead and jump into the podcast. So first thing I want to discuss, what is classified as high blood pressure? So high blood pressure, as I mentioned earlier, classifications have changed. So currently in the United States, stage one hypertension is classified as having a blood pressure of consistently higher than 130 over 80. 130 is called the systolic, and the 80, the bottom number, is called diastolic. So we have our systolic blood pressure, which is a pressure in our blood vessels when our heart is pumping. So our heart pumps the blood, and the pressure goes up, and then it goes down in between beats. So we have our systolic, which is when the heart is pumping, our diastolic, which is when it is relaxed, and that is our blood pressure. So that pressure, the number that we're reading out, is the amount of pressure that is in our blood vessels at that current moment. If the pressure is higher, that places more stress on our heart and the walls of our blood vessels. So very high levels of pressure, the heart has to pump against a higher pressure gradient. That causes more work on the heart, which can cause the heart stress over time. That also places stress on the walls of the blood vessels. So if the pressure is higher, that causes damage to the walls of blood vessels, and that also leads to negative health effects over time. So high blood pressure can lead to negative effects on both our heart and our blood vessels. This is our cardiovascular system. Cardio stands for heart. Vascular stands for blood vessels. And this is heart disease. This is the number one killer. So we really want to pay attention to our blood pressure. We don't want to let our blood pressure be high and unmanaged. It's considered a quote-unquote silent killer because it can cause damage to the blood vessels. And you don't really notice it or feel it over time. You just start to lose function in the places where there are very small blood vessels. And those are like our eyes and our nerves. So people start to lose nerve function. People start to lose vision. People start to lose the ability to have an erection for men because those blood vessels are small and those are highly reliant on proper function of our cardiovascular system. So it's really important to keep our blood pressure managed. Now, how do we do that? First, let's talk about what causes high blood pressure. Now, our blood pressure will go up in response to a few different things. The most important ones that we really want to focus on is increased blood volume, increased heart rate. So if we have more blood, there's going to be higher pressure in our blood vessels if our blood vessels don't appropriately respond to that increase in blood volume. Increased heart rate. So if your heart's pumping more, it's going to be pumping more blood. It's going to create a higher pressure gradient. Also, the thickness of our blood matters. This depends on a few factors, but the diet that we eat actually influences the stickiness or the thickness of our blood. The ability of our blood vessels to dilate in the size of our blood vessels. So if your blood vessels are larger and they have the ability to dilate or get even larger and constrict when they need to constrict, then that will help to regulate your blood pressure better. And our blood vessels are like a little muscle. So we have these, you know, blood vessels that go throughout our whole body. And I mean, they're not like a little muscle, they are a muscle. And so there's basically muscles that are contracting and dilating to help our blood flow. And our blood vessels can become dysfunctional for a variety of reasons. Nutrition plays a large role in this. And this is called endothelial dysfunction. And it's the cells of the blood vessels that don't function properly and they don't dilate and constrict properly. And this can contribute to high blood pressure. So these are the factors that can contribute to high blood pressure. We have higher heart rate. We have more blood volume. We have thicker blood or stickier blood. And then you have blood vessels that get smaller and lose their ability to dilate. And this is one of the main reasons, or probably the main reason, that smoking contributes to high blood pressure, is it damages the walls of the blood vessels so that they become more stiff and they don't dilate properly. And so then blood pressure goes up, and it's just from damage to the walls of the blood vessels from the toxins that are consistently being inhaled through the cigarette smoke. So that is how, you know, kind of smoking can contribute to it. And smoking is one of the major risk factors for hypertension. So if you're smoking, that's something that you definitely want to try to get away from, especially if you have high blood pressure. But there's other reasons why you want to stop smoking as well. So let's go ahead and jump into how do we approach this from a nutrition and lifestyle perspective. What are the things when it comes to nutrition, when it comes to lifestyle, that have shown to be beneficial for improving blood pressure? I mentioned smoking. Smoking can cause damage to the lining of the blood vessels and negatively affect blood pressure. Another important one, blood volume. So I mentioned higher blood volume can increase blood pressure. Excess sodium consumption will increase blood volume because it will cause us to retain more water. And 92% of Americans consume higher than the government recommended guidelines of sodium consumption. And this is a big factor. So the dietary strategies that have been shown to have the biggest benefit on blood pressure are typically sodium reduction diets, because most people are eating too much sodium. And if you get them on a lower sodium diet, that's typically going to improve blood pressure. Now, it's important to note that there's a big individual to individual difference in what's called salt sensitivity. So you can take two people, you can put them on a higher salt diet. One's blood pressure will increase significantly because they'll retain more sodium. The other person will excrete that sodium very easily and they won't have an increase in blood pressure. This is why you will often see some people promoting high levels of salt consumption and they are fine. They don't have high blood pressure because some people can do that. It's the same thing with LDL cholesterol. I've discussed this in the saturated fat episode, which I will link in the show notes if you want to check that out. But our response to saturated fat in terms of increased LDL cholesterol is highly dependent on genetics. Same thing with blood pressure. So some people can eat more sodium and they're fine. Some people will have an increase in blood pressure. Now, there's other factors. The amount of exercise that you're doing, the amount that you're sweating is also going to be important in determining how much sodium you need. But for the most part, the average person is consuming too much sodium. Now, if you're eating no processed foods, chances are, and you're not putting a lot of salt in your food, chances are you might not be. But most people, if you're including processed foods into your diet, you're eating out occasionally, you're going to be eating quite a bit of sodium. And if you have high blood pressure, it's probably going to be one of the most important things that you can do in order to improve it, is focus on reducing your sodium consumption. Now, an easy way to do that, or not an easy way to do that, but a way to do that that's going to enhance the overall quality of your diet and improve your health from a variety of perspectives is to consume less ultra-processed food that has a lot of sodium added to it. So chips and pizzas and some breads and sauces, and you'll find sodium that's in very high amounts in a variety of foods that you'd be surprised about when you start reading labels, and it's going to be typically in ultra-processed foods because the sodium helps with preservation, also helps with flavor, and you're also going to see that often in fast food restaurants where one meal is going to have your entire daily needs of sodium. So it's important if you're trying to reduce your blood pressure, this is one of the main things that you need to focus on. So most of the research that has shown significant improvements in blood pressure has been done with sodium-restricted diets. So this is really important. The other side, sodium acts basically in contrast to potassium. So potassium is a diuretic. And so potassium consumption, increasing potassium consumption, is also helpful for improving blood pressure. So this has also been shown in clinical trials, multiple clinical trials where they increase potassium consumption, blood pressure goes down a little bit. Now, sodium consumption, reducing that, especially if you're high, especially if you're sensitive, going to have a much more profound effect, but potassium consumption is also important. And potassium, most people don't consume enough potassium because potassium is found in plant-rich foods. So you're going to find a lot of potassium in apricots, but you're also just going to find small amounts in a variety of plant-based foods. So if you look at, and I'll link into a blog post. So I recommend if you're listening to this and you have high blood pressure and you want to improve it, then I recommend going to my blog. So go to dradrianchavez.com/blood pressure. And I'm going to put all of the information that we've covered in this episode into a text format. And then I'm going to include links so that you can go look at, let's say, for example, when we talk about potassium, I don't want to go into detail about all the foods. You're not going to remember this stuff. So I'd rather you just go to the website, click on the links, and you'll be able to find potassium-rich foods, and you'll be able to see that, sit down with it, take notes, and you'll actually be able to take action on the information that you're listening to today. So if you don't have high blood pressure, this information is just going to be helpful for you, interesting, helpful. It's going to give you, you know, something to think about in terms of preventing hypertension in the future. But if you already have it and you're trying to improve it and you want to take action on it, highly recommend going to dradrianchavez.com/blood pressure, and you'll find a little bit more information there. And it's just going to be easier for you to sit down with this information, take some notes, and really put together a game plan for yourself as opposed to just listening to this on the go. So highly recommend doing that. But we were talking about potassium. Potassium is important. Potassium's in like most plant foods. So if you eat a very plant-rich diet, if your diet is centered around lots of plant foods, you include beans and lentils and nuts and seeds and a variety of, you know, fruits and vegetables, you're probably going to be getting a decent amount of potassium, but the vast majority of people, I think it's over 90% of Americans, consume too little. And so that's because most people don't eat a full serving of vegetables or a full serving of fruits each day. That's the average, you know, consumption in the U.S. population. And most people are consuming the majority of their diet from ultra-processed food. So it doesn't necessarily require you to completely focus on centering your diet around potassium-rich foods. If you're eating a whole foods diet that's including lots of plant foods, mostly unprocessed foods, you'll probably be getting there in terms of potassium. But that's another thing that can be helpful, is increasing your consumption of potassium. Now, another thing that's helpful is consuming more antioxidant-rich foods. I mentioned a second ago that smoking can lead to oxidative stress, can damage the lining of the blood vessels. Well, antioxidant-rich foods can help with basically neutralizing oxidative stress. So when we have something like cigarette smoke that we inhale, it creates what are called free radicals. These are unstable molecules in our body. So basically, like something in the cigarette smoke will react with a cell in our blood vessels, and it will disrupt the function of that cell. Well, what antioxidant-rich foods can do is, these antioxidants have different ways of neutralizing free radicals. So they'll basically like donate an electron or attach to a free radical, and they neutralize that free radical and they prevent it from causing damage. And so when we consume more antioxidant-rich foods, it seems to lower blood pressure and seems to have a positive effect on our cardiovascular health. Now, some of the most beneficial antioxidant-rich foods that have been shown to both improve blood pressure and then also have just positive long-term effects on cardiovascular health are things like berries and grapes, like really dark blue, red, purple type of fruits, and also vegetables as well. And these have what are called anthocyanins. These are a certain type of nutrient that has been shown to have high antioxidant capacity and seems to be uniquely beneficial, or, you know, just more beneficial than other types of nutrients for neutralizing some of these free radicals in our endothelial cells and helping to keep blood pressure down. So this has also been shown. So like I mentioned, grapes, cherries, everything that has that dark, deep red, blue, purple color. So raspberries, blueberries, all of that. There's also foods that have precursors to nitric oxide, and nitric oxide is a molecule that helps to dilate our blood vessels. These are called nitrates in foods, and you can find these in beets and also some in spinach as well. And these, as I mentioned, they serve as precursors for the production of nitric oxide, which helps to dilate our blood vessels and reduce our blood pressure. So there's also been studies that have shown that spinach and beets can also help with blood pressure regulation. Same, as I mentioned, with all of the dark colored stuff. Chocolate is another one. So chocolate is rich in antioxidant nutrients, especially darker chocolates. So darker chocolates have been shown to have slightly positive effects on blood pressure. Flax seeds is another one. So there's multiple clinical trials that have shown that flax seeds can improve blood pressure. Fiber overall, specifically soluble fiber, has been shown to have positive effects on blood pressure. Another thing, if you're drinking a lot, like a couple drinks per day or more, reducing that or eliminating that is likely going to improve your blood pressure. So multiple drinks per day associated with higher blood pressure will increase your blood pressure. So if that's a habit that you're currently engaging in, definitely going to be best to try to work on that. Getting rid of that is going to have multiple positive effects on your health. If you're carrying too much body fat, particularly abdominal body fat, it's going to be beneficial for your blood pressure to lose a little bit of that fat. Doesn't mean you have to get down to, you know, really small 25 BMI type weight. Just 5-10% of your body weight is likely going to make a big difference in your blood pressure. So just losing a little bit of weight in most cases will give you a lot of benefit in terms of health improvement, blood pressure, blood sugar, cholesterol. You don't have to lose it all in order to get healthy. You just have to reverse some of the habits that got you to where you are, and that will naturally cause some weight loss, and you'll be healthier from the habits plus the little bit of weight loss that you achieve through those habits as well. So that's another important thing. Those are mainly the things that we want to focus on when it comes to nutrition. You know, whole foods diet, reducing sodium consumption, antioxidant-rich diet, consuming plenty of potassium, probably incorporating some nitrate-rich foods. Again, I'll map this all out in my blog post. In addition to that, we want to make sure that we're exercising. So exercise can help to reduce blood pressure, because when we exercise, it basically trains our blood vessels to dilate and contract. When we exercise, we increase the energy demands, which increases the blood demands to working muscles. And in order to meet those blood demands and energy demands, our blood vessels in our heart have to pump a little bit more and have to get used to pumping more and getting more blood through our system. And it does that by dilating our blood vessels and getting better at doing that. And so we essentially train our blood vessels to regulate our blood pressure better when we exercise. Really important to exercise, both cardiovascular exercise and resistance exercise can both be beneficial. I gave some general exercise recommendations a few shows ago. I will link that in the show notes as well. That will be helpful for anyone who's trying to get into exercise. But you want to be trying to get, you know, about 150 minutes throughout the week. So 30 minutes at least 5 days per week. And that will usually lead to a significant improvement in blood pressure, especially if you're doing a mix of cardio and resistance training. But any type of movement is going to be helpful. So there's actually studies that have shown that just 3 5-minute walks or 5 3-minute walks throughout the day has been shown to improve blood pressure throughout a 24-hour period, like a decent improvement, like 2 to 3 millimeters per mercury. So like you can go from a 125 over, say, 84 to potentially 120 over 80 just with a little bit of movement. So movement is incredibly important. Get what you can get in. Don't feel like you have to, you know, go to the gym and formally exercise and put together a 5-day-a-week routine that includes resistance training and cardio and all of that. Get started somewhere, get consistent, then you can get into a more complicated routine. But the most important thing is doing something. So if it's just walking, if it's swimming, if it's biking, if it's, you know, just doing whatever you can to get started, get consistent. If you want to get into more detail, get some guidance, definitely do that. But get started with something, and that's where the most benefits are going to come, or from going from nothing to doing something. So I highly recommend that. Beyond that, there's two other things that are really important for blood pressure: sleep and stress management. And they're important for some of the same reasons. So when we are highly stressed, that activates what's called our sympathetic nervous system, that increases heart rate and it increases blood pressure. So if you're consistently feeling like you're highly stressed, if you're stressed at work, stressed at home, stressed while you're driving, and you're constantly in a state of parasympathetic dominance where you feel like you're just extremely stressed out all the time, that's going to increase your blood pressure. So one of the things that you may want to work on is reducing your perceived stress and reducing your response to the stressors in your life, because we all have stressors and the way that we respond to them is how our body is going to experience them. So working on that response can be really helpful. And then the other thing is sleep. So if you're lacking sleep, your body will be in a more sympathetic dominant state just as a result of a lack of sleep, and that can increase blood pressure as well. So these two things can also help to reduce blood pressure. But if you put together a strategy and you include some dietary changes, you lose some weight, you reduce your sodium, eat more potassium, you include some, you know, lots more vegetables into your diet, and you include more antioxidant-rich foods, you go and get a little bit of exercise, you lose a little bit of weight, focus and prioritize on sleep a little bit more, and you're just more mindful about your reactions and your stress. For most people, if you put together a strategy of nutrition and lifestyle approaches, you can significantly improve your blood pressure and in most cases get off medication or not need medication. And I've seen a lot of people do this. I've worked with a lot of people who have done this and just taken the strategies and advice that I discussed here, usually with a little bit more detail, and put them into action. So if you are someone who has high blood pressure or high cholesterol or you're pre-diabetic or a combination of those and you want some help, you want some guidance from a nutrition standpoint, I'm opening up a couple of consultations for this month, for the month of March coming up. I don't normally do this, but as I'm going through this episode, I know that there are some people who are just going to want some more specific guidance in blood pressure, cholesterol, prediabetes. These are areas where I can sit down with someone, I can look at their diet, I can give you specific recommendations. And if you put them into action, you are most likely going to be able to significantly improve each of these variables. So I've worked with a lot of people on these things. This is what I specialized in during my PhD. This is why I can talk about this so easily. I can just put together notes from the top of my head on these topics because I've read about them quite a bit. And I've worked with a lot of people with these cardiovascular and metabolic issues earlier in my career. I've developed an interest in digestive issues because they are a little bit more complicated over the last several years. But I want to open up a few spots for anyone who is interested in working directly with me, doing a one-time consultation and really discussing your current diet and the recommendations that I would make for you in order to improve, again, either blood pressure, lipids, prediabetes, or the combination of them, or a little bit of each of them. So if you're interested in that, you can go to that blog post and I'll put a link there, or you can go to the show notes. So that blog post is going to be at dradrianchavez.com/bloodpressure, or put a link to the show notes. Again, I'm only going to open up a few spots and then I'm going to take that link down, but I want to help some people to implement some of this information. So you can go ahead and check that out. But the way that that works is, like, if you schedule the consultation, I send you some information, take a review of your health history, current medications, all of that good stuff. And then we sit down, I, you know, learn more about your diet, talk in detail about what you're currently eating, come up with some strategies and recommendations for making changes. And then I send you a detailed write-up of exactly what it is that I recommend in terms of reducing sodium consumption, strategies to do that, increasing potassium, if these are the things that we recommend, increasing antioxidant consumption, exercise, all of that good stuff. And you take those recommendations, you put them in action, and you see improvements. Because with these things, if you're motivated and you have the baseline of information of listening to my podcast and you have a decent amount of nutritional knowledge, I can really point you in the right direction to get the results that you want with this type of service. So if you're interested in that, go to the link in the show notes or on the blog. If you have any questions, feel free to email us at support@dradrianchavez.com. And that's all I have for this episode. I hope this was helpful. Hope you all have a great day and we will see you next week.